Welcome to another edition of the Thoroughbred Daily News Writers Room. It's a special one. It's our Thanksgiving edition. My name is Bill Finley, and I'm a writer for the Thoroughbred Daily News. Also co-host the Down the Stretch show with Dave Johnson on Sirius XM Radio on Saturdays.
How's everybody doing? How y'all doing? I'm Randy Moss, NBC Sports. I was going to give thanks for finally getting head-on replays, but we don't have them. We're going in race week four of no head-ons for the Breeders' Cup World Championship. So fingers crossed that I can get those soon.
Working on that. For your Christmas present, Randy. Zoe Cadman here with First Racing and XBTV. And I'm going to dive completely off topic right now. And Randy, you can help me out with this guy. I went to the Rams game last night, Rams and Eagles. Oh, and it was great. And I don't profess to know a whole lot about football. Who's the Barkley guy that plays for the Eagles? He was amazing. He was...
The which guy?
Saquon Barkley.
Oh, Saquon Barkley is the best running back in the NFL.
He was amazing. Like, he basically won the game for the Eagles last night.
If you want to really be blown away, Zoe, and anybody else that doesn't know that much about football, go to YouTube and put in Saquon Barkley jump.
Okay.
And watch the move that he made about 3 weeks ago while carrying the ball, and you will be absolutely astounded.
Yeah, he was amazing. I was like, who is this guy?
Yeah,
he basically carried the whole team.
I wish I had him on my fantasy team, but alas, I don't.
All right, guys, I had a good idea. Let's talk about horses while we're at it.
Yeah.
Okay. The big story last week, and I'm so glad that we had Mark Cornett on, one of the co-owners of White Abarrio, because he was really revealing. White Abarrio came back on Friday and he said, they're just not looking for a win. They want to see him really dazzle them and really prove that he's back, as opposed to the horse that struggled so much earlier in the year. Says if he only wins by a couple lengths, you might even retire him. They got exactly what they were looking for, a very powerful performance, won by 10 and change. Now he's on track for the Pegasus World Cup. Are there better horses out there? Maybe. But right now, it's hard to think of any, especially if he's going to come back to that form that he had when he won the Breeders' Cup Classic, Randy.
Yeah, I believe Mark Cornett told us that the Japanese had expressed some interest in standing him at stud, and they were trying to decide whether they're going to keep him racing until then or just go ahead and pull the plug on his racing career now. And that race on Friday was going to be the determining factor. And I think he certainly passed all the tests. Now, you pointed out, Bill, that there wasn't much in there against him. I mean, he was a 1-5 favorite. It was a short field. It was 7 furlongs. But he wins by 10 and a quarter lengths. Looked really strong the last quarter of a mile, as you would expect. The initial buyer speed figure preliminary comes back at 94. I wouldn't pay any attention to that. It could have been 98. It could have been 101, 102. It doesn't really matter. It's immaterial. It was just the way he ran, the way he looked, the way he came back, having not run since the Metropolitan Handicap, the way he came back to form. And Zoe, I think it's pretty exciting if this horse is going to be back to where he was before.
Off 168 days, winning by 10. I love the call by Pete Aiello, as advertised. And that was exactly what he was supposed to do, winning by 10. He was asked down the lane by Arad Ortiz, just simply put, because they wanted him to get something out of it. And, you know, it's easy winning wrapped up and snugly by 2, but you want to know if the horse still has the want to do it. So the fact when he pushed a button and said, let's go, boy, he took off. He looked like the White Abarrio of old. Really good run.
It's also interesting that we assumed that he was going to go from this race to the Harlan's Holiday, which is the main prep for the Pegasus World Cup. And I talked to Mark just the other day, and if you read today's Thoroughbred Daily News, he says he's still considering the Harlan's Holiday, but he's more likely to run in the Mr. Prospector. He says he just loves that way of two sprints, getting him set up for a very best effort at a mile and an eighth, which, of course, is the distance of the Pegasus World Cup. Makes perfect sense to me. He was talking about how it worked real well, getting him ready for the Whitney next year. So that's where we may see him next. just a little bit of surprise, but his logic, it really, you know, made sense.
Yeah. I mean, he's got to be, Mark's a great guy, but being a horse trainer, he's got to be kind of hard to train for because he does call an awful lot of the shots. And I think that's probably why him and Safi get on so well, because Safi knows how to handle everything that's going on around him because he's dealt with him for a long time. Mark's got big ideas and they do often plan out, but he plans. He's a planner.
That's a great point.
So the other big race over the weekend that really impressed me was the Chalukyi Stakes at Churchill Downs. And this is Too Sharp is a very fast horse. We knew that coming into the race. She had run buyers of 96, 94, and 98. So she goes out and wins her first ever stakes victory in the Chalukyi. I think in that Filly and Mayor sprint division in 2025, she's going to be right up there with any of them. But so I want to ask you a question. I saw this was so unusual. In his previous start, in her previous start, she won by 6 1/4 lengths. And what do? They put blinkers on her. I've never seen something like that. It used to be, a matter of fact, Randy, wasn't there a time back when we were a young bucks that you couldn't change to blinkers after a victory?
Well, you have to get special permission, I think, right, from the stewards in order to change after a victory. It's not that it can't be done, but it's rare that they allow it.
Yeah, she does have a habit. I didn't actually check the blinkers. They weren't very big. And I'm not sure if one cup was bigger than the other. But if you watch her, especially even this time, she does have a habit of just drifting out. And as fast as she's going, she is drifting out. You can see one rein a little bit baggy, but man, she's quick. She's quick, 44-4, and to keep on going and win like she did, she is good. But I firmly believe those blinkers are maybe just to keep her a little bit straighter. I'm not sure, but that's the only thing, because you sure as hell don't need her to go any faster than she's going.
She's supposed to be quick, right? Richard Rigney stepped up and bought her for $925,000 as a yearling. And now her next start's being penciled in. We talked about this race last week, the La Brea at Santa Anita. Grade one, 7 furlongs, day after Christmas. We talked last week about the Sandy Bottom and Tamara being pointed for that race as well. And who knows what else might be out there lurking in the weeds. Maybe Bob Baffert's got one. Who knows? But the La Brea, especially if Too Sharp can make it to the race, is going to be absolutely fantastic. And what really strikes me, this is kind of a rabbit hole, of course, but the pedigree. Right. How good has Candy Ride been? He was maybe the most underrated racehorse of the last 25 years. And now he's been one of the most underrated stallions. I mean, not only has he been sensational himself as a stallion, he was the sire of Gunrunner, who's now, of course, the sire of Sierra Leone, the Breeders' Cup Classic winner. He was the sire of Twirling Candy, who's had 9 grade one winners and continues to really be strong as a stallion. And, he was also the sire of Vekoma, who right now is the number 2 sire in America among first crop stallions. So Candy Ride continues to make his presence felt, and he's still standing at stud at Lane's End Farm.
Yeah, what a cool racehorse he was, because he had horrific problems with his feet. And for him to do what he did throughout his career with having not great feet was absolutely amazing. And just the heart, everything that he showed, he has passed on for generations so far. So, yeah, really cool story. Twirling Candy, very, very good. Too Sharp is the real deal. The TDN Writers' Room is brought to you by Keeneland. Make plans to attend the 3-day January sale, which will be held from January the 13th to January the 15th. I can attest, it's usually pretty chilly right about then, so bring your warm wellies. Keeneland's January Horses of All Ages sale is noted for high-quality broodmare prospects and short yearlings, and for being the final opportunities for breeders to obtain stock as the breeding season nears. We'll be right back after this message from Keeneland.
At Keeneland, a horse will always be measured in hands. Hands that see, that sense, that speak. Hands that hold our sport to a higher standard. Not for our sake, but for theirs. For the love of the horse. for generations to come.
This week's Fastest Horse of the Week is brought to you by Timberlake, another of the fast sires at Windstar Farm. He was fast right from the beginning of his racing career. He broke his maiden by 9 1/4 lengths, was a TD and Rising Star. Then he won the Champagne Stakes. Then as a three-year-old, he won the Rebel Stakes. And now Timberlake joins Practical Joke as the only grade one winning two-year-olds by Into Mischief, currently standing at stud. Timberlake actually begins his stud career next year at Windstar Farm, standing for a fee of $20,000. That might even entice Justin Timberlake to buy a mare and breed to his name's sake. Meanwhile, that Fastest Horse of the Week won Friday's featured race at Churchill Downs. Run Carson took an open allowance at 5 1/2 furlongs on the turf by a length and a quarter under Flavian Pratt and a time of 101.65. That was good for a 100 buyer speed figure. And Run Carson's on a roll in his race before that. He won the Carl Place Stakes in New York, running 6 furlongs in 106.85. He's the son of McLean's Music, owned by NBS Stable. That's Art Neuheidel, John Valentine, and Daryl Shaw, trained by Kelsey Danner. He was Pratt's 52nd graded stakes winner of the year as he closes in on Jerry Bailey's record of 55 in a year. And you may be wondering, we've talked a lot about Carson's Run, the West Point Turf Star, named by Terry Finley after Carson Yost, the inspirational young man who shares the same affliction as the late Cody Dorman. Run Carson is a three-year-old who began his career almost exactly a year after Carson's Run. So is Run Carson named in honor of Carson Yost? Actually, no. The original owner of Run Carson is Tom McCrocklin, whose dog is named Carson. And Carson the dog apparently likes to run. The horse Run Carson can run also, and he is our Fastest Horse of the Week.
Now we welcome in the Gainsway Guests of the Week, and is Everett Dobson. You know the name because he's been in the news recently. He was appointed the new chairman of the Jockey Club. Quite a big job and one of the most important ones in all of racing. And Everett, welcome to the TDN Writers Room podcast brought to you by Gainsway. Let's see. So you don't get paid. Everybody's going to think they can do a better job than you, and it's a thankless job. Why'd you take it?
That's a good question. It's funny you mentioned that because I just finished 9 years on the Graded Stakes Committee. The last four as chairman of that committee. And my wife said, "No, wait a minute. You're going to go from that to that? You're a glutton, right?" So no, I am. I just have a calling, I guess. I mean, I was asked to do it, and I feel like I can be I would be capable of doing it and qualified to do it. So here I am.
So Everett, as these guys know, I can get pretty long-winded, but bear with me here. I'm going to try to set this up properly because I think this is really remarkable. We all know horse racing is facing its share of challenges, and rightly or wrongly, there are certain elements within the sport, and I'm sure we'll get into this, that have been highly critical of the old guard influence at the Jockey Club. This feels almost like a changing of the guard. The previous 7 Jockey Club chairmen, dating back almost a century, were each born into fabulous wealth, mostly Harvard or Yale grads, mostly from families prominent in thoroughbred racing. You weren't raised in the elite Northeast corridor. You were raised in Cheyenne, Oklahoma, population 771. You're not an Ivy Leaguer. You graduated from Southwestern Oklahoma State University. You created wealth, and your family's horse racing background doesn't date back to Man of War. You know, your family didn't build Belmont Park. You got into thoroughbred racing in 1996. I'm not denigrating inherited wealth. Your predecessors were good men who contributed to the sport in a lot of different ways. But the news articles state that Stuart Janney, the outgoing chairman, recommended that you be his successor. Do you get a sense that this may indicate a recognition that new ideas and a fresh approach in the sport might be helpful?
Well, I think there's something to that. I mean, you're right. I'm coming to you from Oklahoma, my resident for many years. I do have a farm in Kentucky and spend a fair amount of my time there. And so I think as much as anything, it is a recognition that the sport is evolving and it's changing. It's not the legacy sport that we knew from 100 years ago or even 25 years ago. And so hopefully my perspective is going to be from a business background. It's going to be from obviously my ownership and the breeding and the racing side of the sport as well. But also I have, involvement and an investment in an NBA basketball team. So I will have a perspective on that. So I think it's the recognition of that. And Stuart, I think Stuart Janney and I had a lot of conversations about my capabilities and what I might bring to the sport, as well as the other stewards. And all of them I know well, or most of them I know well, and the rest I will get to know well. But I think it was there is a recognition that this sport is evolving and changing, and hopefully I can bring those perspectives that are going to matter in the future.
Well, Everett, you're a horse owner. You also mentioned the NBA. How do the two intertwine, and how would you hope to perhaps change the sport, knowing your background in the NBA along with horse racing?
Well, I think if there's some lessons learned, if you will, is that the NBA, for the most part, speaks with one voice. The NBA has their disagreements. That's not going to shock anyone. But most of those disagreements are held behind closed doors. I think in my perspective that the sport of horse racing needs to have more positivity, and hopefully I can bring that and set the negativity on the side for a while. I think we can collectively grow the sport together, and I'm frankly looking forward to having those conversations with, you know, all the constituents that matter, and frankly everybody matters. I really believe that this sport will be benefited by listening and learning from, you know, not just my fellow stewards in the rooms that I'm going to be having those discussions, but around the industry. I mean, I plan to listen to a lot of people from California, a lot of people from the Midwest. Certainly Kentucky is a driving force in this sport right now. So everybody has a perspective. I want to hear it, and I want to coalesce around that perspective and bring this sport, you know, frankly, to the next level.
So Everett, with this new job, you are obviously going to be much more involved with HISA than maybe you would have in the past. It has been a pet project of the previous administration of the Jockey Club. Stuart Janney and Jim Gagliano did a great job getting it go into from just a bill to a law. Although, of course, we have all these lawsuits and people trying to say that it's unconstitutional. But nonetheless, what do you think they've done well, and what do you think they've done wrong?
Well, I think, first of all, let me take a step back. I'm a big proponent of HISA. I have been from day one, and I don't come at that because I was kind of reluctant in the early stages of getting on board, if you will, because of the nature of the federal oversight. But when we had the events in 2019, and I saw that the individual issues around the country were going to be, continue to be individual issues, in many cases, state issues, I became a proponent of HISA. The good news about HISA, it's likely going to be settled once and for all once the Supreme Court rules, hopefully in June of this year, if not sooner. So we're going to have the law of the land. What it's done best is bring uniformity across state boundaries, in my opinion. That uniformity is going a long ways towards the health and safety that we all understand and have recognized, particularly over the last few years. But what it's done wrong is, I don't know that you could say it's done anything wrong, but it's a natural growth. It's a natural evolution. We're obviously all familiar with the provisional suspension issue that has now suddenly become front and center, and that's a good thing. A review of that was necessary. So I don't necessarily want to criticize any particular areas of HISA, particularly as my position right now. But I do think it is, we need to understand that this is not surprising that there's some growing pains, and HISA will be better in the future. I'm a big believer in that.
That's exactly what we've tried to convey as well. This will be a much shorter question, I promise. Rightly or wrongly, as I mentioned before, there are certain elements that have been highly critical of the old guard at the Jockey Club. I think you know who I'm talking about. Everybody else on this podcast probably knows who I'm talking about, Mike Rapoli. Have you sat down with Mike to talk about some of these things. And you know, what's your opinion about some of the things that Mike says that he's trying to do to help benefit the sport?
Well, I mentioned that I have plans to meet with everybody. Oddly enough, Mike was at the Breeders' Cup. I was at the Breeders' Cup, and we were able to spend 3 hours together in a private room and had a great conversation. Very little did we disagree on. There are some things that I think are, in terms of prioritization, I think, you know, we may have a disagreement on a few of those things. But Mike comes at it from a similar approach that I do. He comes at a lot of the issues from a business background. So rather than just looking at it from this is the way we used to do it, business is all about change. Business is about growing and being better. So on that, Mike and I agree. Style, we're a little bit different. So, but that's okay. We laugh about that. But I do think I think Mike is like a lot of people in the sport that wants to see some improvement and some help. And you know, I need to remind everybody I'm just one of 12 stewards until August of next year, and that's when I'll presumably assume the chairmanship. So, but in the meantime, I'm going to be listening to Mike Rapoli and a lot of people that have strong opinions like Mike does.
Do you think he can be an asset to you and the Jockey Club?
Oh, sure. Yeah. No, I don't think there's any question about that. And I did ask Mike if he could have a conversation in advance of some of his positions. And I think he's on board with that. But Mike and I have known each other a long time. So I actually sold Mike a horse 12 or 13 years ago. And I've known Mike. I respect Mike. I think he's got a lot of things that he's saying that are spot on. Now, his tactics, I sometimes might differ with a little bit, but regardless, we need the micropolis of the sport.
You've got 9 months. You basically have a whole pregnancy before you take over next August. So what would be, you're obviously going to have a list of a to-do list, a top 10 list of things that you want to be done. What would be at your number one right now, looking forward to basically when you're about to give birth?
Well, you know, I'm going to answer that question starting with how I approach those kind of topics. I think this, in any organization, whether it's, a breed registry or a business, a long-term outlook is necessary and paramount to success. So in every successful endeavor I've had a 10, 15, 20 year outlook on that endeavor. And I'm going to try to bring that to the Jockey Club. So when you say that in terms of what am I going to do right off the bat, the right off the bat is a 10 or 15 year project for me. So there are initiatives that'll be near term, undoubtedly. But I want to leave this sport better than I found it. And the only way I can approach that is to try to come up with a long-term vision for the sport in collaboration with the people of the sport. And I really sincerely mean that. This is the vision of Everett Dobson. Maybe just one person, but the vision of the sport, the vision of the constituents in the sport makes us all stronger. So, but you can look around, you can quickly look around and see some of the things that we really need to focus on. And I'll start with California racing. This sport needs California racing. And it's not it is a California issue, but California needs our help. We need to roll up our sleeves, go to work, tackle big problems, talk to the influencers in California about how the industry can improve California racing. We've got a full crop decline. That's not sustainable long term. We need to see it plateau and then hopefully come up with the economic reason for people to come back into the sport as breeders. So those things are targets that are some of which are near term, but many of which are going to be longer term in nature. And I really believe that if again, I come at it from a world where you know, next month or next quarter is irrelevant when you're trying to accomplish something over a 10 or 15 year period.
And spoken like a Hall of Famer. Did you guys know that Everett is in the Wireless Hall of Fame? And that's a big deal. Inducted last year, a true Hall of Famer.
Wow.
Congratulations.
You guys did your homework.
I thought it was super interesting.
The population of Cheyenne, Oklahoma to wireless. Yeah, I was very honored to receive that induction this past year. So,
Everett, I'm sure you had many a discussion with your predecessor, and you will probably have a lot more as we go ahead. What is the most important thing? What was the best piece of advice Stuart Janney gave you so far?
Well, you know, Stuart is a big believer in health and safety. And, you know, I know the controversy around the approach that he took to get us to this health and safety area. But I think that in his view of the world, that's table stakes. And so to not compromise in that area, I think, is the best advice that he's given me. And I don't think we're going to start seeing a compromise in that area now. But it's a different, if you think of it like this, everything leading up to the resolution of HISA is a different world than the world after the resolution of HISA. And we're still in that transition, still arguing and bickering about it a bit, but we will get through it. And I hope it, I hope that we have HISA, and I hope that's the law of the land. But if Stuart's legacy is largely going to be around the health and safety issue.
So Thoroughbred Racing, unfortunately, doesn't have a commissioner, and you won't be that commissioner. The Jockey Club is influential, but it doesn't run the sport of horse racing in America. It's much more complex than that. We all know, state-by-state basis. Do you see your role as being more or less a facilitator of some of these ideas that you're talking about and some of these hopes for the sport to get people all in the same room, maybe rowing in the same direction?
Yeah, no, that's an excellent point and an excellent question. By not having a commissioner, the chairman of the Jockey Club maybe has to work a little bit harder. It would be easier if we had a commissioner and the commissioner made a ruling, and that was the end of the ruling, and that was the end of the day. But we're a breed registry that has significant businesses. So I kind of view, first of all, I think my role is to really understand the businesses of the Jockey Club. And frankly, the business of the Jockey Club doesn't end with that. It has two very important nonprofit elements, being the Grayson Jockey Club Research Foundation and the Backstretch Initiative for our workers on the back. So two very important elements of the Jockey Club. Beyond that, the commissioner has to, in my view, the Jockey Club chairman needs to put the Jockey Club in the position to be a resource and an enabler, helping the sport and helping, you know, everybody from Churchill Downs to the hot walker that is on the backstretch. We need to do everything we can to facilitate and enable and support the sport. That doesn't mean we put our head in the sand and aren't prepared to make hard decisions when those decisions need to be made. That's one thing I'm very capable and very, very much a believer of. Don't, just because they're tough doesn't mean you shy away from them. But at the same time, I want to see a jockey club that enables the sport, helps the sport, brings it to the next level.
This sounds like a full-time job. You've got your finger in an awful lot of pies. Where are you going to find the time to do all this, Everett? You're a busy guy.
I am. I am. Thank you, Zoe, for reminding me of that. I don't know. I get, you know, that was the, that there is one element of being, coming on board in August versus currently. And that is that I've got a few things that I'm going to elevate and bring along in my business world that'll help me, assign the time that I need. And you're right. It's going to take some time. It's to do it right. I need to be committed to the timing element.
Everett, I want to get back to your interest in the Oklahoma City Thunder. I know horse racing and NBA basketball is something that you cannot possibly compete. It's the ultimate apples to oranges situation. But the NBA is wildly successful, and the main reason is because it's a star-driven league. You know, my great-grandmother knows who LeBron James is, that sort of thing. Yet in horse racing, as soon as our horses become prominent, as soon as they decide that they are going to become more valuable as sires, they're done. They're done racing. Justify ran six times in his life. So did Flightline. And I know, you know, the economics of the sport are all in favor of that, but I think it's such a hindrance to the ability to grow the sport when a Flightline races six times. Any thoughts on that situation? And is there any magic wand that can be done?
Not in the current environment on that front, but I will point out there's some bright spots within the sport. I mentioned I just came from the Breeders' Cup, and you guys were there, I'm sure, and I think I saw everybody. And we had I thought the telecast was wonderful. I think the ratings were good. So I was thrilled with what I saw there.
Thank you.
If you look at the Kentucky Derby this year. Kentucky Derby's ratings were exceptional. Some of the best television ratings we've seen in year. The interest level for that particular racing event is sky high. Why is that? Well, there's compelling storylines around that start with the horse, certainly. And we need more horses of that stature. It would be great to see the horses go on and compete. But I don't think we should look at the negativity around that and say, oh, if we can't solve that, then we just throw in the towel. And frankly, that's probably one of the toughest things to solve for, simply because the economics of the stallions they're very fragile to begin with. And the economics are so enormous for those stallions coming off the track and going to the breeding shed that it's a tough equation. So my view is let's promote this sport around the positives that have worked and what we're seeing working, and hopefully the economics of the sport play themselves out in the favorable position.
Your two previous predecessors in this job, Stuart Janney and Denny Phipps, held a job for a combined 41 years. So I hope you're ready for some staying power here.
I'm going to thank you in advance.
Yeah. Awesome. I look at this job like I look at everything in my life. If I'm enjoying it, if I'm working on something I really enjoy, and I'm working with people I really enjoy working with, then I'll have the energy. We'll see how long it lasts for me, but. I just turned 65 and I enjoy this. That's all I know right now. So we'll see.
So, Everett, one last question from me. The Jockey Club was involved in an initiative that turned out to be controversial about possibly limiting the number of mares that each stallion can be bred to during the course of each breeding season. That was ultimately dropped. What's your opinion about that particular topic going forward?
Well, my opinion, I'm glad you asked the question, actually. My opinion is that the discussions need to continue. It's one of the most important initiatives that a breed registry, not just in the United States, globally, needs to confront. Now, I am fairly novice at understanding the science around this, but we have had enough conversations at the steward level to understand this issue is still very important. Now, how we approach it in the future is likely going to be different. But it is still, on a global basis, it is a very important subject. And I would be disappointed in you if you believe that we weren't focused on it, because we are. We will continue to have these discussions. We will continue to talk about it. My style is to engage the constituents around the sport that are affected by it, and we'll continue to have those discussions.
Well, Everett, thanks so much for joining us this week as the Gainesway Guest of the Week. Good luck on your job and the coming up with the Jockey Club as the new chairman. Sure, you'll do great, and I'm sure you've got some really good ideas to help the sport. And let's go. Let's get it done.
Very good. Hey, thanks for having me, guys. I look forward to the challenge.
The TD and Riders Room now also brought to you by Gainesway Farm, which has added four new stallions this year, including the dual Grade 1 winner, Muth, who will stand for $35,000 and has been very popular among the breeders at Gainesway's open houses, which are going on right now. Now, really, he's been popular since Muth was a two-year-old, and he breezed 9 3/5 seconds at the OBS sale. It was a success right out of the gate. Broke his maiden in his first start. Of course, he went on to win the American Pharaoh for Bob Baffert at age two, and then the Arkansas Derby at age three. The only son of Good Magic who won a Grade 1 at ages 2 and 3. So, Zoe, every time we talk to you, you're at a sale of some kind. Do you remember Muth at that particular sale?
I mean, he's hard not to forget. Even Ray Charles could have seen Muth at that sale. He was phenomenal. His 9 3 work was effortless. Top Line sold him. It was a fabulous pinhook, actually. I think they bought him for $190,000 and sold him for $2 million. And at the time, you know, Muth's other sibling had not started yet. And it kind of was like, oh, really? And then he came out and did what he did. But he was a showstopper at the sale. Absolutely.
It's a domineering display by the ultra-talented McKenzie.
McKenzie in a dominant performance. One, two, we get to all due. $1,200,000.
Chancer McPatrick proves best.
Chancer McPatrick wins the champagne impressively. It is going to be all Scottish Lassie. She wins the present easily.
PA Bred, I think we've built a brand at this point.
It's excitement at every step.
Roses for Deborah just set a new track record.
On average, for the past decade, Pennsylvania paid over $28 million a year in breeders' awards, restricted races, and owner bonuses. Plus, PA Bred shine on the world's biggest stage. Just three states have bred more Breeders' Cup winners. Learn more at PABred.com.
As usual, the TD and Riders Room also brought to you by the PHBA, the Pennsylvania Horse Breeders Association. Before long, the new Pennsylvania Stallion and Boarding Directory will be available online for 2025. You'll have to watch for that. And when you see it, you will notice that Pennsylvania will have 8 new stallions for 2025. A reminder, we talked about it last week. They are Alejandro, a son of Curlin out of Rachel's Valentina, who herself was a daughter of Rachel Alexandra. Enticed, who previously stood at Darley's John Abell and has produced several stakes winners out of his first couple of crops. Imposing, who has that Ron Winchell pedigree by Gun Runner out of Untappable. That's a horse of the year out of a champion. Tyson, Canada's champion older male of 2023. See, when I screw up, I just keep going. I don't redo it. And Zozos, a Grade 1 placed son of Munnings. As part of the Pennsylvania program, registered Pennsylvania bred sired by a Pennsylvania stallion can receive 40% in breeders awards and up to 40% in owner bonuses for placing first through third. To learn more about that lucrative program, go to PABred.com or you can call 610-444-1050.
Well, the CHRB had a big meeting last week, and we've been talking a lot about the troubles of what's going on in Southern and Northern California. Usually at these kind of meetings, people try to paint a rosy picture. Oh, everything will be fine. We're going to do this. We're going to do that, which made it to me just stand out that Aiden Butler, who is in charge of the racing operations both in Florida and California, he had some very scary things to say about the current state of California racing and its future. Now, he's been arguing for the same thing that they've been arguing for a year or two now, of basically merging the North and South, which has not happened because the Northern tracks, after Golden Gate Fields went out of business, have been running at the fair tracks. But here's some of the things he said. He said, racing in California is heading toward a disaster if Santa Anita and the Northern California thoroughbred interests continue to compete with overlapping meets. Then he happened to say, he described that he said, if right now what's going on with both tracks cutting purses, both North and South, is described as suicide. I guess the whole question, though, is the same that we've been asking for years. What can be done about it short of getting some sort of funding from casinos or HHR machines, Zoe? But it's scary. And, I'm sure a lot of people out your way are very worried about what's going on out there.
Yes. I mean, that is the answer. It has been an unmitigated disaster on both sides. Nobody's winning. We've reached an impasse on negotiations, basically. The South isn't winning. The North isn't winning. I believe they have a CAF meeting on December the 10th to try and finalize some kind of a situation. I don't know what's going to happen, but impasse would be the definite word. We have come to a dead end where it's not good for anyone up north, and I totally feel for the horsemen up north, and it's not good for anyone down south. I'm not an expert on this, but it is a scary situation to watch from the bylines.
When we last talked about this, the Northern California horsemen and breeders were, very much all in on establishing a major track in Pleasanton to take the place of the closed Golden Gate. What's happened, though, is that Pleasanton has dramatically underperformed in betting. The Southern California bettors don't seem to be particularly interested in betting on Pleasanton races, at least not as much as they were betting even on Golden Gate. So now you've got, I think, more of an opening for Southern California to maybe be able to say to the Northern California horsemen, look, we tried this, and what's happening is not only not working for us in Southern California, it's not working for you in Northern California. So we got to try something different. They're talking about a fund to, help pay for transportation of horses back and forth. Maybe something can get done, but, it certainly needs to get done.
And Randy, I think the whole premise started with they thought when they closed down Golden Gate Fields that the Northern California horsemen would come en masse to Southern California. They even made, because some of the horses would be too cheap to compete at Santa Anita, they even made, there were plans to run cheaper races at Los Alamitos for thoroughbreds, $4,000 and $5,000 claimers. But it didn't work the first time. I mean, maybe one or two trainers came, but nobody came. I mean, it's clear, maybe it'll get so bad at Pleasanton, if they're handling, I believe the average handle was $700,000. And of course, they have no slot money, no casino money. If that keeps up, they're going to be running for $4,000 and $5,000 a race. So maybe they'll be forced to do something. But right now, it looks like the Northern California horsemen have kind of dug their heels in and said, we're happy up here. We're going to make this work.
Yeah, the prospect of Northern California horsemen coming to Southern California was really considered like a fringe benefit. Look, if Golden Gate was making a lot of money, they'd still be open. They'd still be racing. They were losing a lot of money. And that's primarily why First Racing cut the cord with Golden Gate. I mean, you can only lose money for so long. And they thought, okay, well, if we do close Golden Gate, then maybe the fringe benefit will be that we'll get some of these horses to help fill lower level races down south, and we'll have bigger field sizes, better betting. It'll be a win-win for everybody. But obviously that hasn't come to pass. Zoe, do you have any
A lot of the
optimism?
I wish I did. A lot of the horsemen in Northern California are older as well. I mean, they've got families, they've got homes up there. It's hard to uplift everything and just come down here for a few months a year. It's expensive. I mean, the cost of living north to south is ridiculous on both sides. And then to have to keep two homes and go backwards and forwards, it's hard enough for the people at Santa Anita that are making the 100-mile commute down to Del Mar as it is, let alone going from north to south. So
yeah,
I wish I had an answer. I really do.
And to Aiden Butler's credit, he acknowledges that. He said, look, I know you don't want to move. I wouldn't want to move if I were you. But maybe we can sit down together at a negotiating table and we can come up with some solution, whether it be horse transportation or whatever, that can help alleviate some of those concerns and can make it as much of a win-win as we possibly can. But that's TBD.
Do want to remind you that the TDN Writers Room is also brought to you by XBTV. And this week's XBT Work of the Week is Stay Hot, one of the best names in horse racing. He works in company with his Peter Ert and stablemate Tariff on Sunday morning at Santa Anita. That stay hot on the inside. He'll go a half mile in 47.4. You don't get much easier than this. He was the winner of the La Jolla Handicap. I almost said La Jolla because I'm reading it. The La Jolla Handicap this summer at Del Mar. And he finished second with not great trips in a pair of grade twos, the Del Mar Derby and the Twilight Derby, and we'll see him this Saturday. Maybe he's going to break through in the Grade 1 Hollywood Derby.
Be a smarter better with XBEED TV. The best horses. With thousands of exclusive morning workouts. All at your fingertips and delivered right into your inbox. Everything you need to be informed. Be smart. Bet smart with XBTV.
All the thrills. Fraction of the bills. Experience the power of the partnership. Change your life. Make new friends and compete at the highest level of thoroughbred racing. West Point Thoroughbreds, the gold standard in racing partnerships. Visit westpointtb.com.
The TD and Riders Room also brought to you by West Point Thoroughbreds. We talked about Carson's run a little bit earlier. The horse of the week, Run Carson, no relation, right? Well, Carson's run will close out his very strong three-year-old campaign this on Saturday. At Del Mar in the Hollywood Derby. He'll bring Dylan Davis with him for the mount for trainer Christoph Clement. Carson's run, of course, won two legs of the New York Turf Triple. He took the Saratoga Derby and the Jockey Club Derby at Aqueduct. West Point and owner Steve Boucher, good news, plan to continue campaigning Carson's run next year as a four-year-old.
So some other things that are happening this week. Now, I've got to preface this by saying we are recording this on Tuesday. And we're going to talk about Barnes, who's going to run at Churchill Downs on Wednesday. So by the time you view this broadcast, this podcast, you'll already know the result. We don't know the result beforehand, but I still think it's worth talking about because, first of all, it's so good to see Bob Baffert back at Churchill to know that this is finally behind us. I'm even wondering, Zoe, but the fact that he's bringing a $3.2 million purchase by Into Mischief, maybe that he wants to not only just come back to Churchill, but put on a little bit of a show and say, hey, remember me? I used to bring 10 of these a year into Churchill Downs for the Derby and everything. It'll be interesting to see. The horse is named after Jimmy Barnes, the very capable assistant. And we'll all be having our eyes on that race on 11/27. Has there been any scuttlebutt about him, about how good he is?
He's pretty good, but I'm not sure he's scared anyone off in this race. This is a full field, and you can't make this up. You couldn't even write a script this good, could you? I mean, this is the first horse that he runs back for the same ownership as the ill-fated Medina Spirit and the whole controversy for that. And he brings this horse back in, a $3.2 million Into Mischief purchase at the Fazek sale. He's good. I'm delighted they've named him after Jimmy, but this is a good race. I'm just pulling it up right now. He draws post position number 3. He's a 6-5 morning line favorite. Bob's had a lot of success at Churchill Downs, even in the undercard races, let alone the Derby. But you got some good horses in here. Barnes will be the favorite in there, but Caribbean Dream draws post position number 7 by Tappet out of Golden Mischief. There's a few other ones in there. Darren Miller's got a nice Twirling Candy in there that I've heard good things about. You never discount Steve Asperson. So it's not a slam dunk, but it'll be super interesting.
Yeah, Caribbean Dream is trained by Brad Cox. He's got a good workout pattern. I mean, Cox just unveiled a nice 2-year-old first-time starter at opening weekend at the fairgrounds to a big two-turn maiden win. Cox is probably loaded with all kinds of horses that we'll see popping up, along with Baffert and Pletcher and Chad Brown and the usual suspects. Also in this race is an interesting horse. You mentioned the Twirling Candy Counter Elite. Counter Elite. There's a horse that's 30-1 in the program by the name of Sinister Smile, trained by Michael Puich. A son of Practical Joke, who breezed a half mile in 46.3 at Churchill Downs in late October. So there's plenty of talent in here. I agree with you. Barnes hasn't scared anyone off.
Not at all.
Well, maybe next week we can report on how he did, looking back on it. The weekend racing action, it's a big weekend, obviously, with Thanksgiving and Black Friday, then the Saturday afterwards. But races not really, a lot of people are not talking about. So one that I want to talk about is the In Reality Stakes on Saturday at Gulfstream Park. What an unusual story, rated by Merit, is owned and bred by St. Elias Stables. And you would think that, okay, so he's by Gun Runner out of some great mare. He's by Battalion Runner, which I don't know very little about. But he has just been slaughtering these horses in this Florida Sire Stakes down at Gulfstream. They've not gone to anything other than into these races. They haven't been tempted to run them against open company. They will next year. But this horse, I know he's not beating open company, but he is awfully good. I could very much see him being the favorite in some of those races like the Fountain of Youth and Florida Derby next year. Randy?
Well, he's won his three lifetime starts by a total of 19 3/4 lengths. Buyer speed figures 92, 93, 99. When he broke his maiden first time out with that 92 buyer, we talked about him on this podcast. He's an interesting story in that it's Vinny Viola, right? St. Elias Stable. Vinny actually raced the Sire Battalion Runner, who was from the same 3-year-old crop as Always Dreaming, the Kentucky Derby winner that Viola co-owned. Battalion Runner didn't make it into the Triple Crown that year. And then he had some setbacks a little bit later on. He's standing for only $2,500 at stud. He's not breeding many horses. But Viola and his wife reportedly have a bit of a soft spot for Battalion Runner. They bought this mare, Banner Waving, for only $19,000 to breed to Battalion Runner. And they kept him in Florida instead of bringing him up to Saratoga. They kept him down there with Michael Yates, you know, just to have kind of a fun horse to sort of, you know, maybe promote Battalion Runner a little bit. And lo and behold, I don't think anyone, Zoe, could have expected a horse that's got this kind of ability.
And this segment brought to you by Florida Thoroughbreds. Thank you very much, Randy Moss. Bill, we went down this rabbit hole with Battalion Runner a few weeks ago, and he's really thrown some very good horses from a very small crop. Did he really get a 99 the other day? Because visually, I didn't think he was that impressive, because he was asked all the way to the wire, but he's sure good amongst Florida breds. I don't know how he's going to stack up when he jumps out of that division, but nobody is beating him against Florida breds right now.
Now he gets two turns for the first time, and he's back in against the horse that we mentioned last week, trained by Safi Joseph, Neo Equos, who was second to rated by Merit in both the Dr. Fager and the Affirmed. In fact, the 1, 2, 3 finishers from those two races are coming back to run on Saturday.
Weekend's action also includes a bunch of 2-year-old races, some good ones at Churchill Downs. The 9th on Saturday is the Goldenrod Stakes for 2-year-old fillies, grade 2. Good. Who else but Brad Cox? Good cheer. The horse has won his last two by 4 3/4 and by 17 lengths. He won the Rags to Riches. 4 3/4, I would think that he would definitely be the favorite in there. I'm more interested in the Kentucky Jockey Club Stakes because, among other things, it's going to be the answer to the question, what's going on with Jonathan's Way? He really didn't run well in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile after looking so good in the Iroquois, trained by Phil Bauer, owned by Robert Rigney's stable. He's got to prove himself in here, but he could still be one of those horses we're talking about next year. But he does need a bounce back race, Randy.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't see any real excuse for him in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. Of course, I haven't seen a head-on replay, so I don't know if anything else happened to him that you couldn't see on the pan shot. But it's not like he ran, you know, way off form. He got a 90 buyer speed figure in the Iroquois, and he comes back with an 86 in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. So he's only about a length and a half or 2 lengths off form there. He looks like, on paper, he would be a pretty solid favorite in this spot, Zoe. You agree?
I have no problem taking Jonathan's Way again. We don't know what really happened at Del Mar. He had to ship across the country. Maybe he woke up with a headache. I believe he's a very, very good horse indeed, and I fully expect him to bounce back. I'm delighted that Joel Rosario is back aboard him. And he's without question the horse to beat in that race. As for the Phillies race, yes, Good Cheer is definitely the one to beat in there. But what about the filly drawn down on the rail? Eclatant, the daughter of Into Mischief. Her numbers are a little bit below those of Good Cheer, but her debut race at Keeneland was pretty eye-catching. I certainly could not throw her out.
And it's another Brad Cox. And Eclatant has the rail and comes off a race at Keeneland in which she was right up on a 21.73 opening quarter mile. So you would expect Eclatant to go to the lead. Good Cheer's a horse that comes from a little off the pace anyway. And she won the Rags to Riches despite having sort of a slow break from the gate. She broke a little sluggishly in there. So, yeah, Good Cheer's going to be a pretty solid favorite, but maybe Brad Cox's other one will make some noise as well. And one more thing about Jonathan's Way, if there's any concern anybody has about, you know, maybe now he's going the wrong way after the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, he came back and worked at Churchill in his first work back after the Breeders' Cup, 58-4 for 5/8 of a mile. So it looks like Jonathan's Way is still Jonathan's Way.
Shouldn't be a problem.
And there's going to be a big weekend of racing at Del Mar with a couple grade ones. The PPs are not yet out on Tuesday, so we are a little bit handcuffed there. But Zoe Kamen always knows what's going on in California, Southern California racing. Zoe, why don't you just give us an overview of what's going on at Del Mar this
weekend? Well, I think we already tipped the hand on a couple of grade ones there. The grade one Hollywood Derby will be on Saturday. And while I don't have PPs, I have some probables here. Chatelas, Formidable Man, Hard-Headed, Stay Hot. We already saw that XBTV work of the week. For trainer Peter Urton, we'll see what kind of trip he can get. Twirling Point, Donegal Momentum, perhaps. Rothschild, King of Goston, and then Carson's Run, who will... Do you think he's going to go off favored over perhaps Stay Hot, Randy?
I'd have to see the PP, Zoe.
Okay, so that's the Grade 1 Hollywood Derby. And then, of course, we have the Matriarch Stakes on Sunday, the Grade 1 Matriarch, Stay and Scam, Omaha Girl, Mufi, who's been very good down there for Jonathan Thomas, Nadette. H.E. Bullet's perhaps the most interesting for me because she was pulled from the sale by trainer Richard Bolters because they want to run her. So she's going to be in there, Aspen Grove, Sacred Wish, perhaps Gina Romantica, an Aussie girl. And then, of course, we have the two-year-olds, Cecil B. DeMille on Sunday, Laszlo, Katie's Angels, Sabretooth, Scipio, Pali Kitten perhaps will be in there. And then there should be the boys in here, the Jimmy Durante. Sea Runner, Casaloo, Super Speed, Will Then, Resolve, Acquitted, Tequila and Therapy, a Chili Philly, Origami, and C'est la Vie Charlie. Those are the probables for this weekend's stakes. Now, whether they all run, I'm not sure, but it's always a fun weekend down there at Del Mar for that turf festival.
So how long is the Matriarch? Is it a mile? I'm pretty sure it is a mile. A.G. Bullet ran a hell of a race in the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint. I mean, she was right there slugging it out, turning for home. And she's proven that she can go a mile, especially when she gets her kind of trip on the front end. And who's going to outrun her? She's going to be tough to beat, even if Gina Romantica's
in there. And she loves Del Mar as well. She does really well down there. And she's been doing super. So that was perhaps the most interesting one. And Carson's Run and Stay Hot in the grade one for the boys. Stay Hot's had a horrible trip his last couple of runs. We'll see if he can get some redemption for Urton.
All right, so we'll bring you up to speed next week when we can review those races. That's going to be a wrap for this week's show. I want to thank so much my partners, Randy Moss and Zoe Kamen, and our producers and editors, Katie Petruniak, Sue Finley, and Anthony LaRocca, and Aaliyah LaRocca. Sue got to mention again this week. All right. That's it for this week's version. Thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for viewing. Everybody have a wonderful Thanksgiving. Don't eat too much turkey. And we'll see you back at the races next weekend.